You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 9 June, and day 75 of lockdown. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Derek Janssen van Rensburg will be talking Brait, will be talking MTN. We'll be chatting with Keelan and Glouville, talking listed property. It's recovering. The index is looking good. Is it out of the woods yet? And then I want to get a sense of how do we get a vaccine from idea to production? We keep on seeing the market getting excited around individual stocks and more broadly on little bits of good news. What is that process and how do we understand where we are in that process? Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Fortress writes off 26% of retail rent for April. And Business Day, activists gun for Standard Bank directors over climate. Morning markets, we saw the US S&P 500 up 1.2% last night. NASDAQ up 1.1%. That is another all-time high for the NASDAQ. Asia, Sydney catching up after being closed yesterday, up 2.6%. Tokyo off 0.8%. Commodities see oil still green with the rest in the red. The Rand at 16.73 and top 40 opening call for a slightly green open.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Derek Janssen van Rensburg, he of Anchor Securities. Derek, morning. Update to a statement yesterday from Brait. They're selling their Iceland foods. They're getting about £115 million for it. Its March NAV was about £134 million. And of course, they bought it for north of £250 million. Bit of a fire sale, but truthfully, right now they need the cash and the sort of new management really are looking to unwind Brait and make it into it's almost maybe a cash show, get rid of the assets.
Yeah, morning, Simon. I think, you know, this is almost like the perfect environment for any companies that are sitting with debt on balance sheet. So, you know, as we know, interest rates have come down so sharply to the levels that they're at the moment. And that's just not even from a local perspective. It's also globally.
Yeah.
On the back of that, you've also got a lot of restructuring taking place. You know, as you said, fire sale of assets. So if you're in an environment where you are debt laden at this stage, plus doing the right things in terms of settling and squashing some of that debt, you know, it really does set up companies very well in an environment that we're in at the moment. And that's obviously on the back of a big surge yesterday in the share price. So if you can kind of navigate through this debt position and squash a lot of that debt, then I think it's going to be read very well from a market perspective and obviously coming off very, very low low levels and we've seen that sharp bounce back in a lot of these companies. It also talks to a little bit of the property sector. So interesting move. I think if you can be in a position where you can squeeze out some of the debt on balance sheet across the board in this kind of market, then you're seen as doing the right thing and it's going to be received very well by the market.
Yeah, you mentioned a good day. It was up 30% yesterday at 4 Rand closing. They're still calling their NAV around 8 to 850, so still 50% of NAV. Derek, you mentioned the property sector. Certainly that index, the J253, has been bouncing strongly. My sense is probably not out of the woods, and I'm chatting with Keelan and Glover in a moment around it, but not out of the woods, but perhaps April really was that low point for them and the worst is behind them, even if it's going to be tough for probably another year or two?
Yeah, I think they have certainly been through a very tough time, a tough environment. You know, you are going to see some dividends foregone probably for the next 12 to 18 months. But I think what it does come into play is the ability to see quite a lot of M&A activity with some of the properties on balance sheets. And you talk about fire sale of assets. If you can be in a position where you can address some of the debt on balance sheet, if you can do clever JV structures with some of the other listed property counters out there, then you are going to be in a good position. I see Redefine issued a cautionary yesterday, obviously dealing with their debt and selling some of their assets or related to selling some of their assets. And I guess it's just sending the right message to the market that they're aware of what's going on from a balance sheet perspective, they're addressing it. And again, just from a macroeconomic perspective, well, guess what? Debt is cheap. So it is quite a nice environment in the very short term for a lot of these listed property counters to kind of navigate through on the back of this COVID-19 crisis.
That's a great point. Debt is at the moment very cheap. And as you pointed out a moment ago, it's cheap around the world. It's not unique to us. MTN, more woes yesterday. Their December 2019 claims it violated America's Anti-Terrorism Act by paying Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The US is going after them. The stock didn't seem to respond. If anything, it's probably more of an issue around Nigeria, their biggest market, low oil prices impacting that. And the share's off. I mean, it was down at almost 25 Rand in March. It's now 58 Rand, seemingly ignoring terrorism, perhaps more concerns around Nigeria, however.
This is not the first time this news has broken. So, you know, MTN is a share that's probably, it looks extremely cheap on paper, and one has to argue, well, why is it cheap? And it's obviously dealt in jurisdictions, and it's had its own hurdles that it's had to cross from regulatory perspectives, the jurisdictions where it operates in. So this is certainly a high-risk type counter, not for your sort of orphans and widows. But yeah. I mean, you know, if you just look at it on balance sheet and just look at the company from a fundamental perspective, there's still significant value. And I think this is a company that would have probably navigated the COVID-19 / lockdown crisis quite well, in a quite a strong position. So, I think the news is not great. It does send a degree of a negative sentiment towards it. But if they can navigate it, if they can bring back cash from Nigeria and deliver it to shareholders, you know, and they can sort of clean the sheet in terms of the negative connotations associated with MTN in terms of underhand dealings, then there's still some room for some upside. And as I said, you know, with money and equities being very attractive, money very cheap at the moment, I still think you're going to see quite a significant flow into the equity asset class. And it's going to be resilient, even on the back of a little bit of bad news. I still think that as an asset class, it's going to attract a certain degree of flows.
That's an important point you make there. We're still seeing cash flowing into the equity. And certainly MTN, mobile telco, that's got to be a space that's going to work well in the current lockdown COVID-19 pandemic environment. Derek Jansen van Rensburg, Anchor Securities. Gent, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Keelan Nglovo. He's head of listed property funds at Stanlib. Keelan, appreciate your time this morning. We certainly have seen the property index under pressure. We've seen property stocks under pressure. My sense from some of the updates we've seen, Liberty 2 Degrees a couple of weeks ago, Growthpoint, is that April was really, really tough for them, but they're kind of coming out of that. We saw the Fortress update, rental write-offs, but kind of moving. April probably their worst month, May a little better, maybe even June picking up in terms of rentals, particularly in the retail space.
Hi, good morning, Simon. Yes, it's been quite tough, as you say. So April was the toughest month with level 5, and May getting better, level 4. June should be much better than May at level 3 lockdown. So we expect an improvement of a low base. But the retail sector has been the hardest hit in this crisis.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. And I haven't yet been to one of the big sort of, you know, large size malls. But reports are both from anecdotal people visiting and from the sense we've seen that much of the GLA, the gross lettable area, is now open, aside obviously from sit down restaurants, aside from some businesses that perhaps simply haven't survived during the lockdown periods. Your sense, the property stocks are managing their tenants, they're engaging with them, they're doing it collectively. Collectively as an industry and trying to keep their revenue as best they can going in the right direction?
Yes, there's been with the property industry group that has been created to deal with this. And so there's been a couple of packages offered to tenants to as much as 100%, let's say, for restaurants as well as hair salons as well. Mm-hmm. So those that can trade at all, they've been offered a big relief in terms of rent. And it's been tough for the malls. If you look at, let's say, April, foot count fell anywhere between 50 to 60%. And then May saw an improvement, foot count falling down at 40%, 45%. And we believe in June it should be probably less than 30% of the peak numbers. So rental negotiations happening. And in this market, you just have to nurse ailing tenants as opposed to have them live out of space, because it costs much more to do that.
Yeah, I like that phrase, nursing your tenants. Debt levels, listed property, they always have debt. It's the business model. It's how they work as a REIT. How much of that debt is going to be sort of linked to interest rates rather than fixed? Because certainly we've seen globally and in South Africa, interest rates coming down massively. And if they've got linked rates, that's going to certainly help them in this tough environment.
Yes, it does help, but the sector tends to fix most of its debt. So on average, we've got about 80% of fixed debt. So 20% will benefit from the interest rates coming down. And that helps as well, because we've had big interest rate cuts.
Okay, so only about 20% there. We're going to see some asset disposals. We're going to see some M&A activity. Are you expecting that to start sort of happening almost now in the middle of the year? Or is that something maybe we'll see that later this year, perhaps even early into next year, as the property stocks, A, manage their own tenants, and then B, see how others are managing tenants before they start any talks around asset disposal or perhaps mergers and acquisitions?
Yeah, that's a good point, Simon, because if you look at it as well, most property companies are focusing on their own issues. And the biggest one would be to reduce the loan-to-value ratios, retain some of the income, and to take over a company in it's difficult to price transactions now because the market has been so volatile. If you look at over the last week or so, the market is up over 20, almost 25%. So how do you price transactions? And the other critical point is that we're going to get a round of valuations coming up. Mm-hmm. So we expect the capital values or the physical property values to come down as well. So no one really knows what's going to be the exact values when that comes through. And so those are the challenges that make it difficult to price transactions right now. Volatility and uncertainty of valuation. And all those issues as well in the underlying companies.
I attended a presentation you did at the JSE October last year. At that, you were talking listed property. You also said that you were preferring offshore listed property as opposed to local. Has that view changed? I mean, obviously, local is now fundamentally cheaper, but the risks have fundamentally changed as well.
Sure, we still prefer that as well, offshore inclusion in the portfolios. Mainly in the industrial space or logistics space, mm-hmm. whether it's UK or Europe as well, and even in Australia. So we do have companies exposed to that. So the retail sector, more challenging. And one thing we should highlight that most of our offshore exposure is in retail and it's in Central and Eastern Europe. But we've seen a big improvement in those markets as those economies are opening up, as well as big government packages as well from the local economies as well as the EU.
Okay. So offshore retail, Central Eastern Europe. We'll leave that there. Keelan Ngluvo, he's head listed property funds at Stanlib. Gent, appreciate your time this morning.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb now
with Simon Brown
on the Money. Also available on podcast.
So we keep on seeing markets generally getting all excited around early stage vaccine development, not just broad market excitement, but obviously at particular stocks as they make announcements. And I thought I need to understand, what is this process? How do we get a vaccine from concept to ultimately being injected into individuals? So I got the BioVac CEO on the line, Dr. Marina Makonana. Doctor, thanks for your time this morning. We're hearing a lot around stage one trials. Success here, obviously important so we can get to the later stages. What are the later stages? Having had a successful stage one trial, what then? How many more stages? How much more complex are those stages that follow the initial?
Hi, good morning, Simon. Thanks for having me. So vaccine development and even therapeutic development is typically a long time that it takes. So before you even get to phase one clinical trials, you typically start in the lab developing your vaccine and using whatever concept that you think would work. From the lab, you then take it to animal tests, and in some instances, you take it to, you know, you use mouse models, and in other instances, they use even bigger animals like macaque monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get a safety reading or even an immunogenicity reading from your animal results, you then get some level of indication. You don't get the whole comfort, but you get some level of indication that you can go into humans. You then have to apply to the regulatory authorities in your country, and then they would then look at your lab data and your animal data and say, well, it appears as if you can go into humans. Now, the phase one trial that you're asking about is the first in human trials that would then go, and typically what you do there is that you take healthy individuals, healthy young adults. So you don't take anybody that has the disease.
Mm-hmm.
You take healthy adults, you inject them with a vaccine in a confined area, making sure that, you know, because the whole issue about phase one is about safety. So with phase one, you're not necessarily looking at whether the vaccine works. You just want to get a safety profile because just to make sure that your vaccine is safe. You may get some early indications that you know that you're getting antibodies, but it's really a safety trial. Once you go through the safety, then you say, okay, now I want to see whether it works. Okay,
gotcha.
That's phase mm-hmm. two. Phase two essentially takes a bigger sample from your phase one, and that bigger sample then, depending on the trial design, also has a mix of those that are typically would be exposed to the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So the phase one, you take healthy ones, just looking at safety, confined, and just, you know, you get through that. Phase two, you then take what would look like a normal population, and then that's where you want to see, okay, is my vaccine really giving antibodies, and is it giving the right antibodies? Because you can give antibodies, but sometimes it's, you know,
mm-hmm.
they're essentially useless. And then phase three, that's a much bigger trial, and that's really representative of what's happening in the population. And depending on the trial design, you know, with typical vaccines, sometimes the biggest one that we know of is just taken 80,000 subjects.
Wow.
So those are the three phases in clinical trials that happens. This is before licensure.
Yeah.
So maybe let me pause there.
And so, I mean, that process, certainly we're expediating it. And I imagine part of the expediation process is simply that we have got 100 plus companies working on vaccines for COVID-19, whereas typically you would have, you know, maybe a handful. Is it something which can, you know, a lot of talk, I saw a headline this morning, vaccine by September. Are these timelines really possible if a lot goes right? Or is this something that is going to significantly take into 2021?
Yeah, so look, I mean, COVID is really shaking up our sector, even globally, and testing, you know, the speed with which things can work. It's even testing regulators, because even regulators have to make decisions, you know, at a pace that they haven't before. I must say, one of the things about COVID is that, you know, other vaccines, you require combination. So you add this, and you add this, and you add that, and that sometimes, you know, takes up a lot of time in development. But also when you get clinical trials, you have to look at a lot of parameters. With COVID, it's somewhat simpler because you're looking at what we call a single antigen. So you're just looking at the bug itself, and you know exactly where it's going to. So the readout that you're looking for, or the pointers, or the indicators, you know, are far less. So that essentially helps.
Okay.
Now, the issue around September and end of the year, what companies are actually saying is that I would have a good indication of my antibody results, that if they are good, I'm hoping to have the first doses out. Now, that doesn't mean that they will have the capacity to give for anybody that wants it. But, you know, it's essentially an indication that, okay, I may have my first vaccine because I will already have an indication out of my phase two trial.
I got you. And that'll be sort of frontline workers, because ultimately we've got to do 8 billion of these vaccines, and then we've got to get them into 8 billion people. And that in of itself is going to be an issue. But the frontline workers, perhaps we can do that early. I really appreciate your time this morning. So that's BioVac CEO helping us understand how vaccines are working. That's it for this morning's show. You'll find us live every morning, 6:30, on the moneyweb.co.za website or the MoneyWeb app. Podcasts from 7 a.m. Chat to us on social media using hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to you for listening, my guests, my producer, my sound engineer. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow morning.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.